Welcome to this week's episode of the Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host. And this week I'm joined, as usual, by Seth Wintraub. How are you doing, Seth?
Good.
And Seth is just back from a trip to Portugal, where he had to try a very cool EV that's coming to market pretty soon.
It's a rough job.
Yeah, we have a very difficult job here, going to Portugal to try a luxury EV, the Jaguar I-Pace. So how was it, Seth?
It was pretty cool, I have to say. It wasn't just buying me a nice trip to Europe and putting me up and letting me ride it on a racetrack and through dirt, which was nice. But even if they didn't do all that stuff, I think it would be hard to say anything bad about the I-Pace. It's a really nice car.
It is. I mean, people are pretty excited. I mean, if you've been following the coverage of the I-Pace, you've seen a few of those posts come out in the last few weeks, really, that they've been doing the same trip with a bunch of reporters and YouTubers and people with an audience. And it was our turn this week, and Seth posted it's pretty much the review, our review of the I-Pace, because it's the most time that we spent with the car yet. And
I wouldn't call it like the full electric review. I hope we get some more time with it, but it was just kind of like, you know, I was driving it for like 2 days straight, so I kind of felt like I was able to review it. They said it was the final version of the car. Like, these cars are actually going to go to dealers in Portugal, or in Europe. So I think it's not like these are going to be scrapped or going to be company cars. These are actually real cars that are going into the fleet. So I kind of feel like that's a good car. I mean, that's a good representation of the car. We got to do just about anything we wanted to with them, and they handled really nicely. Like I said in the post, things I would, you know, consider. Obviously, it's very expensive. I don't think they're going to make too many of them. I feel like
20,000 range. I've been.
Yeah, 20,000, and we know Google's going to get some of them. I don't know if 20,000 is outside of the 20,000 that Google's getting, and Google's getting those 20,000 over 4 or 5 years or something.
Yeah,
I don't think. It's going to be a great car. I think a lot of people are going to want it. I don't think it's going to be an easy car to get. I feel like it's going to be kind of like the Hyundai Ioniq, where they have this very low expectation. They've only made like an order from battery and the pack are both made by LG. So I don't know that this is going to be an easy car to get a hold of outside of California and New York, where they're probably going to send 90% of them.
Yeah, that's the thing that is bummer, because I think that's one of the few EVs right now on the market that are really pushing the industry forward. It's a good looking car. I mean, it's hard to buy. I don't know in person if you agreed, but I've only seen it in pictures.
Yeah,
right?
No,
now.
It's a great car. So that's the thing. A lot of people are saying, well, it's a Model X, but it really, like, you know, we drive a Model X, and it's not even close to the same interior size. Like, it's way closer. I would almost say it's closer to a Model 3 interior than it is to even a Model S interior. Because, you're sitting quite close to the person next to you. It's a really, like, really lovely interior. Like, a lot of wood accents. And what you would expect from Jaguar is, like, exactly what you would expect. The navigation screen is very small, but it works pretty well. But size wise, it's way more a car than even, I would say it's like crossover car size rather than SUV crossover size.
But it still have a lot of utility to it. You said you took it off road, and you were pretty impressed by
it. Yeah, it was kind of crazy because the cars that we got to take off road came with 22-inch carbon fiber wheels, which is like the last thing you would think they'd want us to take off road. But they did a kind of like a thing where they blocked off the road, and they said, "Oh, you got to go through this dirt thing," and like we hadn't seen.
As if,
right,
as if
and,
that was
and it was funny because
situation.
Like we had all seen the videos from the other reviewers that had already been through this, so we knew what was coming. But it was, mm-hmm. I have to say, I was worried going up this hill because it was such a steep hill that Like, if you turn to the left or right too far, you would roll. I'm sure of it. It was at least 45 degrees, and it was, and like the guy would actually tell you to stop in the middle and then start up again. So you're basically on the middle of a 45 degree hill and starting the car up. And, you know, every once in a while, one of the four wheels would start spinning, but, you know, they all caught it, you know, it would just somehow work. And then we went through a stream as well. You know, it wasn't a super deep stream, but it was, you know, maybe a foot or something. And, it did performed really well through that. And then on the second day.
Yeah. You have a hair, sorry to interrupt you, but you have a hair suspension, right? You can.
Yeah. They have a thing that raises the suspension.
The ground clearance.
50 millimeters. Does that sound right? Like.
Five centimeters.
About two inches higher, which I guess that's something. It's already, I mean, you already ride a little bit higher than, you know, let's say the Tesla or, you know, a typical car. So you're riding a little bit higher already. But, like, I have to say, like, I did not think we were going to go on what we went on, even though I had seen. It looked a lot more daunting in real life than it did in the videos. You know, and we went fast on the dirt road. So we were on, like, just a dirt track. Like, any car could go on this thing, but we were going, like, 45, 50 miles per hour on a dirt track. Probably destroyed the underbody of the car with all the rocks and dirt we were kicking up. But
you did mention that there's a
yeah. Plate, so I talked this early on in the Tesla scene. There was a couple highway accidents where, like, they would run over a piece of rebar that was on the highway, and it would kick up into the bottom of the battery pack, and that kicking up basically, like, at highway speeds. Is like a bullet going through there, and it would puncture the bottom of the battery pack and go into the battery and start a fire. And, you know, frankly, if it didn't hit the battery pack, it could probably kill the occupants because, you know, you're basically getting a huge piece of metal going at highway speeds up through your car. Anyway, Tesla ended up putting a titanium plate below the aluminum plate to block it, and they showed videos of it running over a cinder block at highway speeds, which is, you know, pretty significant. So knowing this, having that background, I was asking about the plates under this car, and they didn't seem to be phased at all. And I was like, you know, 7 millimeters of aluminum, which was a spec, that doesn't seem very strong. You know, like, just in my mind, aluminum. You know, aluminum cans, for instance, they don't seem very strong. 7 millimeters of aluminum, that does seem a lot stronger, but it's... Well, yeah.
That's like,
but
seven
still,
times a can.
7 millimeters, that's not even a centimeter of, you know, like closer to a half centimeter of aluminum. That doesn't seem like something that would be able to stop too much, but, you know, they seem to be plenty happy with it and okay with the situation.
Yeah, the thing is, with the Tesla, that was almost like freak accident things, because it did happen, like, a few of them in a very short period of time, so everybody started freaking out. But the thing is, if that was a regular car, like, it would have been a crazy accident too, because we've seen sometimes, like, pieces of metal just going completely through the floorboard and into the passenger cabin. So the fact that they all happened in a very short period of time, I think that was the really big deal. So most people shouldn't be very afraid. Tesla sort of reacted to it as a almost like a PR thing more than an actual, like, statistically, does this make a big difference? But of course, the fire thing.
Yeah, no,
helps.
It doesn't. So that was the underside. One of the commenters is talking about the proportions of it. It's got a really long wheelbase, but beyond the wheelbase, there's not much in front or back. So the cabin is actually pretty big, but the cargo space in the back and the frunk is like microscopic. I took a picture with my backpack, which wouldn't fit in there. So you can't even fit a backpack. It's more like a glove box in the front of the car. I think it would probably be a good spot to put your charging cables if you wanted to take your charging cables with you. It feels like it would just fit a charging cable nicely.
Well, it looks like there's just slits in there, like if it's to put documents or something. Am I seeing it from the picture?
There's a big tunnel that goes from the nose plate, because Jaguar's got that big nose plate. But if there's actually a hole that goes from the nose plate underneath the hood and then comes up, back up, like right before the windshield. And the idea behind that is to blow air onto the windshield and to the back windshield that clears off the windshield, so you don't have to use the windshield wipers. And the back doesn't even have a windshield wiper.
So there's actually a real hair intake.
Yeah. I mean, the air, instead of going into a grill, because there's nothing to cool down really, goes up back. You know, it doesn't get blocked. It just goes up over the car.
So that's what's
shrunk. Right, right. The front would be much bigger otherwise. And it's almost like a front spoiler. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a weird idea. You know, because it's kind of directing wind over the car instead of having other kind of vortices happen. It's an interesting idea. I mean, I think Jaguar, just the nameplate, they have to have that big thing in the front, and rather than put in something like what Tesla did with that nose cone thing, they have a nose cone, but instead of the air goes through the nose cone up over the car, which is kind of weird. You know, I don't know how much it contributes to this, but the coefficient of drag on the I-Pace is 0.29, which compares to the 0.24, I believe, with the Model X. And the chief designer, who was a pretty cool guy, Wayne Burgess, told me that, clearly he was thinking Tesla is the competitor here. Some of the reasons that the Tesla has a smaller drag coefficient is because it doesn't spend as much air intake cooling the engine. And I think kind of erroneously, he gave the example of the ability to only go ludicrous speed a few times. But I think that the Teslas on the track do start overheating and kind of go into emergency mode after a while. I don't know head-to-head how far they go compared to the Jaguar. And then he also noted that the Tesla Model X design actually is like a wing, and it creates some lift, which obviously you don't want at high speeds. I don't think it's a big deal at the low hundreds where the Model X tops out. Yeah. But I was going to say, like, getting that thing off the ground you'd need like a couple wings. Anyway, he was like, our car is pushed down, so that we lose a little bit of drag, but we gain, stability at high speeds, which,
And like you highlighted in the post, it's not the same. It's more of a performance car, the high pace, than the
Yeah, I mean, X, right? It feels like that. I mean, Jaguar doesn't make not performance, not luxury cars. Like, that's just what they do. I think they spent some time, like, really playing, like, optimizing this for off-road, optimizing it for speed. Like, it feels like they really did their homework on this one.
Yeah, and Jaguar normally, for some of the vehicle, they offer some performance packages and some off-road packages. So it wouldn't be too surprising that if they got it so right with just the standard I-Pace, they could try to optimize each of those aspects for their special. I don't remember what they called
it. Well, in the US, it's called SHE, Sport Edition, or HSE, High Sport Edition. Anyway, it's kind of weird because, most cars, and even Tesla, the base model gets a kind of base model engine and drivetrain, and the high end gets a better drivetrain. But with the Jaguar, you get the exact same car, except bigger tires, but you get the same suspension, you get the same raising suspension, you get the same drivetrain, you get the same battery. Everything's the exact same, except you're paying like $10,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 more for different tires, like you'll get a glass roof, stuff like that. But you're getting pretty much the same car. So if I'm buying a I-Pace, I'm getting the base model. Although those tires do look kind of cool. The big ones.
So do you think the average seller price would be pretty close to the
standard price? I don't know. Obviously, you're talking about $70,000 car, and if the people who are buying $70,000 cars, just like Tesla, don't seem to have a problem going to 80 or 90 or 100. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if they get a pretty good ASP on those.
Yeah, but there's also going to be the type of people that's sort of like some early Tesla adopters that weren't really luxury car buyers still ended up buying it because there was a Tesla, was electric. I think the Jaguar has some potential at that level too, though Tesla already covered a lot of those type of buyers that were just going for
vehicle. From my understanding, I think they're going to do pretty well just with Jaguar buyers. Like the people who wanted an electric but weren't quite sure if they should trust Tesla or with the Model X or Model S or 3, I think there's going to be a lot of people who want this car that are just Jaguar buyers.
I guess it's going to come down to the experience.
Well, that's one of my main concerns. So at the event, there was absolutely no mention of charging at all. Like it was, we barely even opened the charge port even once. And the cars came to us fully charged. They don't tell us how they charge them, where they charge them. They're just magically fully charged. And my feeling is, and from talking to the reps, is that the dealers aren't going to get a thorough idea of how these things charge. I think it's going to be one of those things where they're like, yeah, you just plug it in at home. I don't know what you're supposed to do. And they said that each dealership has to have a level 2 32 amp charger, which seems really small and slow to me.
I know 32 amps
on a 90 kilowatt hour battery. That's a lot of time to charge. It's like 12 hours to go from zero to full. So, overnight is optimistic if you're starting from empty. Clearly, a dealer won't, if they're smart, they're not going to drive 240 miles a day. But, this is dealers. We're talking about people who aren't versed at using EVs, so they'll probably leave it uncharged a couple times and be like, oh, this thing sucks. What would be nice is if they actually had a DC fast charger, 100 kilowatt. And I've said this like 100 times before, but like Chevy could do the same thing. Like, tell your dealers, just get a fast charger, put in I'm sure it takes some money to get a 480 three phase put into your building, and the inverter's probably not cheap, but put one of those in your showroom so that you can show people how it charges and how fast it charges. It would give people the peace of mind that, oh, you can actually charge this thing pretty quickly. And, almost as quickly as a gas station. So it just shows me that these people have very little experience with day-to-day usage of EVs. And it was a really unfortunate part of the thing, because the car is a really nice car.
Yeah, they should maybe even, I know they already do that at dealership that sells both EVs and gas-powered cars, where they have salespeople specifically trained for selling electric vehicles. But I think those people should probably like get a rental of the car for like weeks on end and months on end, and even have a home charger installed at their house and that, just to get a very good feel of the EV charging experience, where they can get an idea that's not that difficult, and you can more easily communicate that to the buyers. Because we've heard it time and time again. There've even been studies on it that the friction to buy an EV at dealership where they mostly sell gas-powered cars is putting off EV adoption in a big way. And
I would say that you would almost need to create a sub-brand or a sub-division of, in Chevy's case, Chevy, and say, like, this is the Volt and Bolt group, and this is a different, you either want a gas car or an electric car, and if you want an electric car, go to this sub-brand over here where these people only sell Volts and Bolts, and they know how to charge, and they have one at home and all this stuff. Jaguar, it would be smart of them to do so, but they've already said they're only going to sell 20,000 of these a year. They're not going to...
Yeah, so they don't need to, right?
And those 20,000, I would imagine, are probably already sold.
Yeah, that's the thing. There's going to be all pre-sold items. There's going to be a list. People are going to put their name, or putting their name right now on list at dealership to get them. So they don't actually need to actively sell them. So that's
a it's frustrating because like, problem. what if you tried to sell EVs? Like, what if Chevy really tried to sell the Bolt? Like, what if they said, "All right, the future of our company depends on this. Let's put some money into marketing. Let's put some money into training." But it's not happening yet. Clearly, the only company that's really, obviously focused on EVs is Tesla.
And then they also don't need to sell them that much. Like, no one is learning that much about actively selling EVs because they don't need to. Either they're not good at it, so they're putting away some customers at existing dealership, or it's just so popular, the vehicle is so popular that they don't need to sell it that much to actually market it. I mean, very special kind of situation we're in right now in the...
It is kind of a weird adoption time. At this point. Tesla, I guess they could probably try to sell the Model X and S. They probably have some.
That's a good point.
That would make sense.
Yeah. They're trying to sell right now just with the referral program and everything. That's a way to sell them. And they went. That's another interesting, too. Like, maybe they should do that. They should copy Tesla in that way because a lot of times the owners are better salesmen than the people actually paid to sell the car. So the referral program, well, you're sort of a little bit paid too, but I think that was a smart approach from Tesla. Not that the salespeople at Tesla are not knowledgeable, because I think they are more knowledgeable about EVs than the average salesperson in a Chevy dealership, for example. But I think there's a lot of work.
Yeah. I mean, so overall, it's a great car. And, you know, we're going to see the Audi and the Porsche later this year. So there's actually some things happening in this space. And then on the low side, the Kona and the Niro from Hyundai and Kia. So the crossover segment is all of a sudden starting to be like, hey, I want a crossover EV. Well, you've got like quite a few choices. You're going to have like six choices here pretty soon. Six good choices. So, great. There's one area that we're full of EVs. And actually, I talked to the design head, Wayne Burgess at Jaguar, like, hey, why don't you do a F-type EV, or why don't you do a convertible EV? And he's like, you know, the reason why there's so many EVs in the crossover form factor is it's a good factor for, you know, putting batteries in. Crossovers and SUVs are only going up in sales right now, so there's room to kind of fill out the budget. I guess there's like little fiefdoms in every company, and if you want to make an EV, like, everybody's telling you not to make one in their size. So you know, there's a lot of reasons that the crossover is kind of a good size and shape to build in. Also, you know, it's a little bit more aerodynamic than a full-size SUV, so the battery packs don't have to be, you know, super huge.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I guess we can move on to Tesla right now. It's pretty rare that we are 25
Tesla.
Minutes in and we
I've
haven't
heard
talked
of
about Tesla. The big thing this week, of course, was the first big consequences of the already announced restructuring of the company. So Tesla announced this week that they're going to do a 9% layoff round. They're going to lay off 9% of the workforce. So we got that news. We got news earlier this week. We started working on it, but then we published on Tuesday after right before Elon ended up officially announcing it in an email to employees. And the specifics are not very clear, other than a 9% total diminution of Tesla's workforce, and production workers, production associates, I should say, are not going to be affected. So that's, of course, in line with Tesla's attempt to increase Model 3 production. And Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people affected. It's not, it's a sad thing, because even Elon said that it was a tough decision, because some people are going to be fired that are not for performance reason. That was Tesla's excuse for a few of the previous layoff round, that it was just performance review, and they were firing the bottom, the people that were performing not as good on their performance review. That's not the occasion this time. You could be a perfectly fine employees and still being let go because of the way that they were restructuring the company. People seem to be taking it pretty good though so far. Like a few employees commented, and they were even those that were letting go, I mean, and they were pretty happy about it. Like they weren't not necessarily happy about it. They weren't they didn't harbor any hate toward Tesla because of it. And they still believe in the mission, and they understand that Tesla's pushing to be profitable by the end of the year.
Yeah, and it was kind of surprising that the market seemed to, I don't want to say like the layoffs, but like it certainly wasn't. They liked the layoffs.
No, they did, yeah. Well, I think it was going up that day, and then it started to stabilize after they announced it, so it wasn't necessarily a boost to Tesla stock. But yeah, if they want to, the market likes profit, and if the goal is profitability, and that brings them closer to it, I think they're going to like that. Another thing that was announced with the layoff is the end of the Tesla Energy's contract with Home Depot. They were going to be at 800 Home Depots across the U.S., and now they're just going to get out of that entirely. That's where they were using the Home Depot to sell solar panels and power walls. They had some energy advisor there, but apparently they won't be part of the layoff that much, because most of them are going to be offered jobs at Tesla stores, because they're trying to sell those products more in Tesla stores instead of the they had a bunch of different sales channels back when it was SolarCity, door to door sales, Home Depots, and at one point they were at another hardware store too. Yeah, forget the name. Was it Lowe's or I think they were in Lowe's too. Then Lowe's went to Vivint, and Tesla City went to Home Depot. So moving around at that, but now Tesla is really focusing on bringing that back into their existing stores, which are already like many of them in high traffic area, like in malls and stuff like that. So that's going to be good for them. And that's not, at least not a major part of the layoff. But it could be like salespeople were affected. We saw a few sales manager being fired this
service,
week.
Yeah.
Some people in service too, service manager. Probably people in engineering too is gonna be let go. 9% is could be over 3,000 employees easy, considering Tesla's current headcount, which is closer to 40,000.
Yeah, but I think somebody noted, I can't remember where, but Tesla has hired like 2 or 3 times that many people this year already. So it's not like the company is getting decimated. It's more like, they're kind of...
I did mention that in the article.
Okay, that's where I read it.
Yeah, that was me. I mentioned that Tesla already hired more employees this year alone than they are firing this week. So it's more about managing growth than... Because, like you said, the market didn't panic or anything. Because, of course, when a company lays off 9% of workforce, doom and gloom start getting involved, and the FUD and so what. Didn't happen in this case, because I think most people understand that it's more about Tesla managing the growth. When you hire, what I mentioned is, from 2015-2018, Tesla added over 15,000 employees. 15,000 employees in less than 3 years, that's a lot of people's hire. So, of course, there's going to be some mismanagement about the hiring process, and you're going to have people into departments that you don't really need them, and there's some duplication of positions and other similar things that can happen. So, even though, we're not saying that those people were worthless and wasn't like anything like that, but... it's probably going to be healthy for long term for the company.
Yeah, I was just thinking, if I worked in PR at Tesla, I would have not said cutting 9% of the employees. I would have just said brought it back to late 2017 levels or early 2018 levels. That would have been...
Yeah, I think someone mentioned that when I talked to Tesla. But I mean, I was gonna, because we broke the story first, and of course Elon then tweeted the email real quick. But from my sources, I was getting 10% of the workforce. So I think I was the first one to bring up that I was gonna say it's 10%. So when I said that, Tesla clarified.
Yeah, oh, it's closer, like, to 9.99.
So they pretty much $10. had to put a number up either way. But yeah, of course, framing it, as you said, makes more sense. And I think it's also more representative. It's not just about making Tesla look good. It's true that Tesla has just been hiring like crazy, and they still are hiring at this point too. They want more people than just the after.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, to me, this seems like they're doing everything they possibly can to get to profitability. Like it is. Like, I don't want to speculate why that it's so important to get to profitability rather than dilute a little bit more or take some more capital markets. Obviously, the shorts are all saying that, you know, Tesla's out of lifelines. I don't think that's the case. But it seems like they've decided that they are going to be profitable this year, and it doesn't matter what they have to do to get there. Like, putting off products, like, you know, just anything. Anything goes, kind of.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, and my point was always, like, I really don't mind Tesla losing more money if it means, like, they need to raise more capital and just accelerate EV adoption. But, I mean, Elon touched on that a little bit on the email by saying that part of their mission to accelerate the transition to electric transport and renewable energy is to convince other automakers to get on board. And as he said, he already did with a few different programs from automakers. But another part of that is also to show that you can do it and be profitable, and that will encourage even more transition in the industry. So it does make sense. And if they can do it this year without putting off too much of their current programs, then it makes sense too. And I mean, they could do it because... When Elon says we're not raising more equity, we're not raising more debt this year, he always mentioned this year. So they could as well just try to reach profitability in the second half of the year. Then first quarter 2019, they go to market, raise $2 billion and accelerate the Model Y, accelerate Tesla Semi, accelerate whatever other vehicle.
Yeah, I guess they're going to be able to go to the capital markets and get more money if they show that if they really wanted to, they could create a profit. I think the best... Mm-hmm. thing to do is kind of emulate the Bezos model, where miraculously every quarter you break even pretty much. If mm-hmm. they can do that, and I know things are much more erratic in the auto world and they don't have as many, it's just like they're younger and smaller and things aren't ramping the same way. But if they could kind of just break even every quarter, I think people would be pretty happy, especially with the growth and revenues and everything else that seems to be pretty easy to come by in Tesla's world.
Yeah. And the other thing too is that it's one of the last thing that Tesla naysayers are grasping to, like the fact that Tesla is always losing money. So if you can, and we know how much the media attention, which is partly the negative media toward Tesla, is pushed in a way by the Tesla short, the Tesla naysayers. They're the ones like driving that, and we know that affects Elon a lot. Like, he talks about the media all the time, especially in the last month or so with the Pravda stuff and similar comments. So if you can take that argument away from the shorts and from the naysayers, it's a smoother ride, I think, for Tesla in general. So that's another aspect.
Yeah, so what do you think the shorts are going to grasp onto next, or are they just going to give up?
Well, I think historically, if you look at, because the shorts, there's always going to be a few Tesla naysayers, but the biggest one are the one that are associated with short position on Tesla stocks. And some of them already went bankrupt on Tesla in the previous run. So if Tesla can really shake off those shorts... at some point, they're all going to give up. I mean,
right.
It's inevitable. There are going to be new ones if Tesla keeps growing, that's for sure. But historically, the biggest run in Tesla stocks was in 2013 after they reported their first profit. Because they did. Some people forget, like, Tesla never makes money. They did one quarter at some point, a few bucks back in 2013. And that's when the stock skyrocketed. So now if they can prove the same thing, but instead at the production rate of a few hundred vehicles per week, they prove it at a production rate of a few thousands vehicle per week, and more than that, actually, like over 7,000 if you include Model S and X, like close to 10,000 vehicles a week, you can prove profitability. Then I think the market doesn't believe that yet, so I think there's going to be a correction up for the stocks if it proves, and if it's a big enough correction, I think you're going to shake off a lot of the shorts that are just going to give up. Maybe they're gonna, if they survive, they're gonna come back later on when Tesla stock is even higher and they see a correction downward. But I think it's gonna be big enough that they're gonna shake off a lot of those shorts, and we're gonna start.
And the stock will hit 400 and 500 and keep going from there.
Yeah, I mean all of them have a number in mind. Like, I can keep up with Tesla and still hold my short position on them if it's. The stock remains under $400 a share, $500 a share. I mean, some of the guys are apparently building like a very large position on them. What's the not Hackman, but
I don't know. I don't follow those guys too closely, to be honest.
Yeah, a big hedge fund guys that admitted that in the last quarter or the quarter before that. His whole hedge fund was down because of his short position of Tesla. So his position has to be pretty, pretty big. So a guy like that, if Tesla gets another 100% run in the short term, he's done. Like, it's not, maybe not his old jail fund, but he's going to have to let go of his short position at some point. And you do that, and you take all his influence away from the negatively affecting Tesla too. So I think it's going to make a big difference. And Elon Musk certainly believe in it because he just bought another $25 million worth of stock this week, which is not that much on the grand scale of Elon's insane stake in Tesla at this point, worth almost $12 billion, I think.
He's also giving some of that away to charity, we found out recently.
Yeah, he just tweeted today. He tweeted about his salary. Like, Bloomberg had a piece about salary in comparison with your workers' average, and he pointed out that his actual salary doesn't make sense. I mean, I think he has a minimum salary in California, but his stock compensation though is pretty big
and getting bigger. Like,
yeah, so he pointed that out, but he said that at one point he's going to sell that off to finance his multi-planetary species ambitions, and to finance some charity work. So I tweeted at him to clarify that, like, to clarify that he wants to sell some of his stake in Tesla to finance his multi-planetary ambition. And he responded that yes, he plans to keep selling a portion of his stakes every few years for his charities, which he already done before. Like, I mean, I'm sure Elon is very charitable and everything, but it also has to do with taxes. So you can get donation deducted on your taxes. And the last time he did it, in the filings, it says it was because of his taxes. He was selling like $600 million worth of Tesla shares to pay his taxes. And part of that was also going to charity, which will have also affected his taxes. So he said he was going to keep doing that every few years.
Sounds like a tax plan.
Whenever he need.
But yeah.
Yeah, because he it's not like he has to pay that amount of tax, $600 million every year. He doesn't exercise his shares, his option every year. So I'm sure he has other income that needs to be taxed. But from Tesla specifically, it doesn't. So every few years, he's going to do that. But he also said, and that was way more interesting, he said that in 20 years, he planned on a major... He phrased it by saying that it's going to be a major major disbursement in about 3 years when Tesla is at a steady state.
Like the batteries, solid state now, steady state.
No, that should be sooner than 20 years, hopefully. But yeah, so that's interesting because Elon previously said that he's going to be the last one to sell his stake in Tesla and everything. I mean, 20 years is pretty, that's pretty fair. I mean, but it's a long time. So the way I understand it is that in 20 years from now, around that time, he plans on selling off a big part of his stake in Tesla in order to finance his Mars colonization project, or at least accelerate it or something. Because I think the Mars SpaceX Mars plans are sooner than that. Like even like in the next few years, they plan on sending the first few missions. But I mean, maybe as they go, the capital needs are going to increase for sure. And I mean, in 20 years from now, like I cannot see the future at all. But I have to, if I go by Elon Musk's expectation, I think his expectation are in line with his CEO compensation plan. And if you go by his stock compensation plan, I mean, his stake in 20 years in Tesla could be worth like north of $30-40 billion easily, like even a lot more than that. Like at 600, I calculated that it's going to be like closer to 25% of $650 billion. I think that's right. $650 billion is the top level.
So we're talking like market over $100 billion pretty easily if everything works out.
Like if everything goes fine, it's between 150 and $200 billion this day.
Yeah.
Which is insane. It's more, it's 1.5 to 2 times
right
what Bezos is worth right now. And I think Bezos is currently the richest man on earth with his stakes in mainly in Amazon, but also a few other ventures. So, I mean, I'm not, you cannot be mad at that if it happens. Like, sure, sell some stock, Elon, and pay yourself a little trip.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, the stockholders can't be upset about that because if Elon makes that much money, they're all making tons of money too.
Yeah, that's the thing. It all goes with them too. So, yeah, $650 billion. I mean, if there's not too much dilution right now, the stock would be like over $2,000 a share or something like that. So,
yep.
But that's all speculation. Tesla Autopilot. There was some news this week about a version 9 software coming. So Tesla released the version 8 of its software back in 2016. So now almost 2 years later, there's going to be a new big update. So there was a ton of updates since, of course. But the version 9 would be a much bigger one. So the other ones were like 8.1, 8.2. And now it's a full new version. And it's going to come with... and that made a lot of weird media attention this week. Because Elon's, when he announced it, he said that version 9 would begin, I'm quoting, begin to enable right. full self-driving features. So the media went wild. Tesla is going to release fully self-driving feature in August. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it was a reference to Tesla's full self-driving capability.
Also, I would even say package, August. Like, which, what percentage of the time does Tesla release its autopilot updates on schedule? I would say that that's close to zero. So maybe like by Christmas, version 9 will be.
Yeah, we're not even talking about that. We're not even talking about the possibility of a delay on that. We're just even talking about the what he's even talking about releasing here, which is I don't think fully self-driving. It's gonna be the first thing where we see a difference between people having a enhanced autopilot package and a fully self-driving package, which doesn't mean that it's going to be fully self-driving, but it's going to be starting to see difference between the two packages. What will those differences look like? It's unclear because the fully self-driving package doesn't have any specific features beyond apparently using more cameras, which never made sense to me. I think they should both use the number of cameras that make it the more efficient as possible under the features package. And the only actual feature in that package was the fact that it would trade fully self-driving. So everything is vague, but apparently Autopilot.
Yeah, it sounds like they're building the foundation for more autonomy. But it's like that's where the foundation starts. It's not where the actual autonomy starts.
Yeah, exactly. Because he said more toward the end of next year that fully self-driving. So that would be a big change in the schedule if that were to happen. He also said that Autopilot will have a new interface on the instrument cluster, so you should be able to even see your blind spot, because right now your car appears you see a wall car, but you don't really see a car right next to you on your black spot in the render that is an instrument cluster. Now you would apparently see it, but it could also be a completely different user interface. So that would be a welcome change, I think. Not that the user right now interface is bad on the instrument cluster, but I mean, it could be better. You could get like a 360 view or something like that.
Yeah, it would be kind of cool, especially for your blind spots, to be able to see what's there just by looking down.
Yeah, because do you have the 360 view on your Ball TV?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. Unfortunately, right? It's only used during like parking type situations, but it's really cool. Like, and it works. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you can see like how close you are to the fire hydrant or the curb and the person behind you. So it's a great thing. BMW also has something similar. I think the i3's got something like that. It's good technology. And
And I think Tesla could make it better.
Yeah, too, well, I mean, they have the cameras already, so it's not like they can't do it. Like,
yeah, they have the camera. They have the ultrasonar sensor all around the cars that are pretty good for parking sensor too. So, yeah, I think there's a big step improvement that can be made with how you see around your cars straight from the instrument cluster or the left side of the screen in case of the Model 3. Yeah, another thing that we haven't discussed last week, I think the update just came out around the same time that we were making the podcast, but there was a new Autopilot update that, speaking of the renders, now you can see the cars on each lanes. But the other thing that came out that we didn't really talk about until this week was the nag of the Autopilot also apparently increased a lot with the last update, where it prompts you to hold the steering wheel almost every 15 to 20 seconds that you're not touching the wheel. And that came with another set of complaints about how do you make that alert go away by the way that you grab the wheel. So, of course, hold the steering wheel just means that people are just like grabbing the wheel. But the way that their sensors are programmed, it's more about applying some torque on the wheel. So you have to move the wheel a little bit. And so a lot of people were saying like, hey, I'm grabbing the wheel and it's still showing me the alert. And the alert, of course, if it doesn't detect that you're grabbing the wheel, increase to the point of actually deactivating the autopilot at some point. So you really need to make those alerts go away. So what Elon said this week is that he's going to change the name of the alert from hold the steering wheel to apply pressure on the steering wheel, up or down a little bit. You don't need to apply that much.
All right, so I have opinions on this. So already it's kind of annoying because, you know, if you're on a straightaway, you're not going left or right, and you're holding the wheel, and it'll already, like before this update, it'll already nag you to hold the wheel even if you're holding the wheel. You just haven't put any pressure on it. So I'm assuming that's going to get worse. I, of course, haven't got the update yet. But so, like, if we step back from this a little bit, I don't think Tesla was planning to have to, like when the whole autopilot thing came out, I don't think they were expecting to have to keep people from, you know, taking their hands off the wheel. You know, I'm the original, you know, that first guy who died with the autopilot, he was straight up sleeping. His hands weren't on the wheel. He didn't have any kind of rig going on. It was just kind of like leaving it in the driver's hands to, you know, quite literally, to stay alert and on the wheel. And some people were taking videos of themselves asleep and all this stuff. So Tesla, and it said, well, you have to keep your hands on the wheel. And if you don't put your hands on the wheel, then, you know, we'll start beeping and then we're going to kick you out. I think they only did that. I don't think the Teslas were designed, for instance, like the GM Super Cruise has that thing that looks at your eyes and keeps your eyes on it. I don't think Teslas were designed from a high level to have the nag function. I think the nag function is something they had to build in later as kind of a band-aid to keep people from doing stupid things. It's a reaction, and it's kind of a hack because they have to, because people are idiots. That's my opinion.
So it's a case of a few people abusing the system and making
kind
it worse
of, yeah.
for
everybody. Which is most of the things that are bad, that we can't have nice things, is because of that.
Yeah, and Elon did mention it, that it's now about like a balance of finding a way to have enough nag to make sure that everybody's paying attention, but not too much nag that people stop using the system. And without using the system, if you're on the highway, you activate the pilot on your Model X, right? Because it's easier. Like, if you're paying attention, it's easier. You have less fatigue that comes in because it's the same reason why you're using cruise control on a regular car. Like, you want to remove some of the tasks while still keeping attention.
Yeah, and it's safer, and you know, you at the end of 2 or 3 hours, you're like way more, you know, less fatigued mentally.
Yeah, so it's worth it, but you have to keep in mind always that you're in control. And so I asked on that post if you think that Tesla actually found that balance and really mixed opinions on it. Rightfully so. I mean, I think it's really tricky a situation that to have. But speaking of that, this week we also posted about I tested the Como AI system on a Tesla, a pre-autopilot Tesla, where they managed to install George Ott's Eon system that is basically an aftermarket autopilot system, and was really impressed.
Yeah, so a little background on that guy, who is an impressive guy. As a teenager in New Jersey, he was the first person to unlock the iPhone, and he did it with, like, he actually did some soldering or something crazy. And then he got a couple, like, somebody traded him, this is typical New Jersey, traded him like a couple Camaros and Transams for the iPhones that he jailbroke. I guess that's how he got into the world. Because he was like 16 at the time, or not even like 15 or something. So he wasn't even able to drive them. Anyway, he did a bunch of the other stuff. He hacked a PlayStation, got sued by Sony, had a rap. Yeah. He did this like YouTube video that was hilarious, like a rap video about how he was going to get back at Sony or something. Then he went to Facebook. Worked at Facebook for a while. I think did he work at Google? I don't know. Anyway, he's been everywhere. Yeah. He's done all kinds of crazy stuff. And this is like his project right now, and it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, he's a little bit more mature now. he might be still in his...
Oh, he's been around.
I'm not sure. And now he set out to do that self-driving, to enter the self-driving space in a more open source way. So he open sourced the code. It's called OpenPilot, which is the driver assist system of the software. So you can use that with is also the hardware, which is pretty much a OnePlus phone that it's embedded inside a case that has some cooling aspect and some of his own software. So you add that with the camera of the phone, of course, and with their open source vision software, they can assess the road, basically find the lines and deliver an auto steer system. And if there's a radar in the car, because right now the system is mostly for Honda vehicles, Toyota, and I think they are announcing GM today. So you can have those installed in your car just with the software that they are already releasing officially. But a bunch of Tesla owners pretty much hacked the Tesla to make it work with pre-autopilot Tesla Model S, and then you can use the same system with those guys. Were their name Jean-Claude Thibault and Robert Cotrin, and you can use their version of autopilot that has been modified for Tesla to make it work with autosteer. And I tried it, and it's damn close to the autopilot autosteer that I have now. So, I mean, that's partly impressive for the work of those two guys for making work with the Tesla. But it also showed that Como AI, this computer vision system, is pretty impressive. They can get to that point pretty fast with a very small team. So I think we're going to keep an eye on them because it could be...
Yeah, I feel like they're kind of the dark horse. Is that the right thing to say, but they're the lowest expectations company in the autonomous driving space, but they've got some real talent. And I think I forgot to mention this, but I think Elon and George Holtz had some sort of idea, like some sort of agreement where he would work on the autopilot that fell through or something.
Yeah. When the startup first came out of Stealth Mode in 2015, he released a bunch of emails to between him and Elon Musk to Bloomberg that did a piece on him. Ashley Vance did a piece on them when he came out of Stealth Mode. And in those emails, it showed that Elon proposed to him to have to come work on Autopilot, so sort of be in charge of Autopilot, even the Autopilot software at least, and to have a multi-million-dollar bonus if he deliver a computer vision system that's competitive with Mobileye, which was Tesla's supplier for the time. And of course, George Hatz has a bunch of opinions on the Mobileye. If you just tap George Hatz Mobileye on YouTube, and you can get some.
Actually, there was a podcast with Jason Calcanis. If you're googling, that's the one you want to listen to.
Yeah, that's the best
So they're the kind of the dark horse, but like, you know, the expectations are so low that they have to meet them, and it'll be interesting to see where they end up. I could see him or Kama AI either getting acquired by Tesla, acquired by Waymo, maybe. I don't know if that's, like, Waymo probably has their own ideas. Or some other, you know, we're not thinking about, some other car company or, you know, one of the early EV companies that are, you know, like Faraday Future wants autonomy. Like, well...
Yeah, a lot of them. There's like they're not like they're small. I think they are 14 people, something like that. But they did get a few $1 million from VC, so the valuation is not like, you know, it's not peanuts or anything. But that's nothing in the self-driving space right now. Everyone is getting hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions.
Yeah, I could actually. That's a good point. I could see them being like GM Cruise, like saying, "Oh, you know, we've kind of pieced this together. It's really not cohesive. I don't think this is a product that will go a long way. We need to kind of get like the next big step. We need to buy something quick." I could see them buying Kama AI just to like fill in the gaps of the technology that they're building.
Yeah. Yeah, that would make sense. Well, we'll keep an eye on them and report back at some point. Right now, before we go, I think we should mention real quick the... we didn't get to talk about it because it happened last weekend, so it happened a while back. It's not in the news too much anymore, but I think it's worth a mention on the podcast. The Tesla Roadster SpaceX package. So we've been talking about it for a few weeks, but now we have a better idea what it's going to be like. It's going to be pretty insane because it's going to have actual thrusters on the car.
Yeah. Cold so air we're running out of superlatives on Elon Musk announcements. Like, insane, ludicrous. Those don't even begin to describe this idea. Which, like, guys, you're going from one
plaid, yeah,
even plaid. It's, like, you're going from 0 to 60 in 1.9 seconds, and you're like, I would love to go just a little bit faster. I don't have any kids. I would rather fill up my. Yeah,
I clearly, don't value like, life that much.
Not much else in this world. Let's just.
Just want a little dose of adrenaline, please, and a little more. So, yeah, what he basically said is that he clarified what is going to be the SpaceX package on the Tesla Roadster, and it's going to be a bunch of COPV bottle, which is basically like reinforced bottle with compressed air inside. And when released, that air produced thrust. And he's talking about having 10 of those, or at least 10 nozzles all around the car, and those COPV bottles, maybe just one big one or a few different ones, but at least 10, about 10 thrusters supplied by those that COP bottle or those COP bottle. That's not clear, but it's going to be big enough that it would actually change the inside of the vehicle, where you would lose the back seat. Though he actually referred to them as the kids' seats when he said that instead of being a two plus two, it's going to be just a two seater. So it's going to be an actual real roadster. So I think people are going to be happy about that, because they were mad that he called it the Tesla Roadster if it has four seats. But they're calling it 2 plus 2, so it's still a Roadster. But the back seat, you refer to them as kid seat, and they would go away and be replaced by those.
I mean, if you think about kids' sizes, you basically get two kids' worth of, you know, air space, compressed air space. That's quite a bit of air. I still think it's zany. I feel like Elon's jerk.
Well, the car,
but it was zany and okay, I get it. Like, I want to go 600 miles. I don't want to think about charging this thing. That's cool. Or like 0 to 60 in 1.9 seconds. I want to beat the Bugatti, and I don't want to talk about 0 to 60 times anymore. This is just the fastest car. But then adding this, like, I don't know. It just doesn't seem like he's hitting the good spot anymore. It's kind of just like going off and doing silly things. Okay.
Well, let's see it first. I mean, I get where you're going with it, but I think it's I think it's gonna be pretty cool too. So the cool aspect.
I guess it would be cool if it like had awesome, smoke coming out of it, like cold air, you know, compressed air.
Well, there's gonna be a sound, that's for sure. Like cold air getting out, that makes a big sound. So. The sound
probably
aspect
cool off the
would
car pretty
cool,
quick as well. I know we used to have these CO2 powered cars in Boy Scouts where you would hit the thing in the CO2 and all the air, the CO2 would come out of the back of the car. Actually, those were not great for carbon. Yeah, but anyway, when you pick up the car afterwards, the thing was frozen. It was like ice crystals would form on the outside. So I'm wondering after this thing, the whole back of your car is like icy, like Back to the Future.
Yeah, Well, I mean, that's what you're talking about, the actual bottle, though. That's where the air is stocked. So I think there's gonna be like some space between the nozzles and the actual bottle. So I'm not sure. I think it's gonna dissipate pretty quickly.
It's just amusing to me that we're talking seriously about this. Like, it's not a...
Yeah, I thought it was a joke when you first announced it. Like, I mean, you're being serious right now? Are you joking again? But yeah, it seems like he's always being serious on Twitter. Well, not always, but most of the time when he's announcing something, because that sounded like an announcement, just a crazy announcement. But if it sounds like an announcement, it sounds like it's real. The other thing, it's cool. Like, so at first he didn't specify that was a cold air system. He just said it was a rocket thruster. So like, what came of fuel you get in a rocket thruster? But then he specified it's going to be just air, which makes more sense because I mean that thing needs to be street legal. So there's actually going to be air intake that's going to replenish the COPV bottle. So it's not like it's still fully electric. That's what I mean. So it's battery powered because the air intake will go into air pumps, and the air pumps will be powered by the battery pack. So using those but that's going to be using air pumps is not as efficient of just going from electricity in the battery to the motor. So it's not an efficient thing. You're going to lose efficiency if you use those COP bottles. But he didn't talk anything about, he released the details of the system, how it's going to work, but he didn't talk about how it's going to affect the specs. So let's see how it's going to affect the specs first, and then we'll see. But, I mean, there's a chance that both you and I is going to get a Roadster. I mean,
yeah, guys, buy your Model S and Access right now, hurry, and use our links.
Yeah, if you guys are looking for a Model S and X, use our referral codes, and we have a chance to getting a Roadster. But so if... I think I know the answer, but if you get one, are you going to order it with the SpaceX package?
I mean, from what I know now.
No. All right.
I'm probably just going to get the base model.
Yeah.
And I'm probably actually, depending on what my insurance cost is, I don't know. I might sell it, or I might, you know, do something with it besides pay insurance on it.
There are not that many options. But for me, I think I have to take the SpaceX package.
If it's free?
If it's free, if I can get it free with the referral program, yeah, for sure.
All right. That'll be fun.
All right. Yeah, that's pretty much. There was some boring company news, guys, but we're already 5 minutes on top of it. Like, it's just that they got the contract for Chicago, so they're coming in Chicago. It's gonna be probably the first loop. It's gonna be there, and Tesla's gonna make the pods that go inside the loop. So that's pretty cool. Other than that, I'm gonna leave you two on a quick note about we were partnering with Flow to launch their charging station in the U.S. So Flow is popular in Canada. Now they are launching the station in the U.S., a pretty good station, more on the higher end of the market. So if you're looking for something cheap, don't go with that. Go with just a regular, NEMA plug or a cheaper charger. But if you're looking for something more high-end with a 5-year warranty and high-quality casing with all aluminum, Flows are very good, and with the pre-launch, they gave us a $200 discount when you order through Electrek. So if you go on the Electrek's website right now and go to our Flow article, you can get the $200 discount. Just something that I thought I'd mention. Of course, we're getting a commission on that, but I think it's a win-win-win situation. And thanks to our Patreon supporters, electrek.com/Patreon. No, the other way around. Patreon.com/Electrek. Thanks a lot for supporting us. That helps a lot, the show a lot. And thanks everyone for watching on YouTube and for listening on your podcast app. We're going to see you next week. Bye-bye.